Kia ora, I'm Christine McFarlane. I'm the current president of the New Zealand Association of Counsellors. We are a professional association that has approximately 3,000 members who are provisional or full members across New Zealand, working in a variety of different services and community services, privately, DHBs, schools, and we ensure that there's a code of ethics and good practice for counsellors. So conversion therapy. So conversion therapy, I dislike the name therapy added to it because in our mind, therapy and counselling and therapy is a positive and supportive process. When I think of conversion therapy, I think of somebody imposing another view on somebody else and trying to make them be something or behave in a way that doesn't fit for themselves. So using different methods to do that. So methods such as medication, such as counselling or therapy. So that's where we get conversion therapy from. And, of course, medication is sometimes called medication therapy. And there's no really clear, positive, good part of imposing, making people be something that they're not. So in conversion therapy, changing their sexual identity, their idea of their own gender and sexual identity. So in particular, about changing somebody who, a young person or an older person who identifies as being queer, rainbow community, a transgender, to being heterosexual, being cisgender.
You were saying that you don't like the term conversion therapy. What term would you use?
I'd like to see it something that, because it's a, for me, it's a form of violence. It's a form of imposing another person's will because of their thoughts or beliefs. So I don't really know what I would call it. I was thinking about it last night and I was like, oh, what would I call it differently?
So just to give a wee bit of international context, do you know where conversion therapy is used internationally?
From my understanding, it comes from a Christian-based belief system. So in patriarchy, in the sense that heterosexual relationships are the only valid relationships, and that man and woman are the only preferred way of being together in terms of heterosexual relationships, and that there's no understanding or belief that there is a continuum or a movement of gender and sexual identity. And the fear that comes from that. So, and this is my opinion of going that people coming from a Christian, some people coming from a Christian point of view have a fear of what that means, and so they're trying to impose and put a Bible's, or interpret the Bible in a way that may not be true for anybody else. And also a part of that is the history of really traditional male-female marriage-type relationships, and that this is what our society has been based on for a very long time.
In New Zealand, historically, has conversion therapy been an issue?
I think it's something that's hidden. I think that what we could call conversion therapy is maybe families and people wanting, shutting down young people's own sense of self and choosing their sexual and gender identity. So they may not call it conversion therapy, but it's certainly happening in a social context or a family context.
Are you able to give some examples of how conversion therapy works?
So in that sense, in what I would call a non-formal sense, I was having a conversation with a family member only last week around a young person who would be in their mid-teens wanting to be a male gender identity, born with female gender, and my family member said that they shouldn't be taking any kinds of medication or hormone therapy because they wouldn't know what they want at that age. So this idea of young people not having the knowledge of who they are and older people making that choice for them or shutting down pathways, and that happens a lot in New Zealand.
What about some examples of, say, professional counsellors or other professionals trying to influence people?
Oh, definitely. There is that sense of working in mental health services where, again, you're too young to know what that means, you don't have the cognitive understanding, this is just a phase you're going through. There's also, within counselling, there is certainly some people will choose not to work in certain areas because of their own beliefs and experience and knowledge and qualifications. And that's what we have in our code of ethics, that you shouldn't work beyond your experience or scope of practice. And if it's something that you have a strong belief in as a counsellor, then you need to excuse yourself from that kind of work. What would be concerning is when counsellors or therapists work with someone and manipulate or change or impose their own beliefs in that. And that can be in a variety of different ways, whether it's to do with leaving a relationship, whether it's about somebody wanting to come out as being queer, whether it's somebody who is using drugs or not using drugs. So it's a variety of different things, or looking for a termination, that counsellors can be very influential in, and we have to be incredibly aware of our own belief systems and what that means.
So it's interesting. I mean, I've always pictured conversion therapy as, it's a course that somebody does, and it's quite blatant that this is what's happening. But it sounds very much like it can happen very quietly as well.
Yes, I think it can. I think it can happen really quietly and without even being aware. And I think that's something that we have to be more talking about. So how do we, by our own beliefs or not knowing enough, and I can't say that I'm an expert in conversion therapy at all, and I'm learning about the impact and the prevalence in New Zealand. We have to be more aware of our own, growing our own self-awareness and growing our own knowledge in this in order to not impose that on other people.
What happens then when an individual comes to a counsellor and says, I want to change? So it's not necessarily being driven from an external force, but this person wants, say they're not happy being gay.
Yep. So for New Zealand Counsellors Association, we have a policy that says we cannot do that. So that our conversion policy says that is not acceptable. So the way we would work with someone would be to talk about what's driving that want to change and look at how can we support you in being who you are in this world now.
What are the impacts of conversion therapy?
A massive mental health problems, suicidality, loss of identity and loss of a sense of who and where somebody fits, that I'm okay, that sense of I'm okay, I'm an okay person, I'm allowed to be who I am. So whenever there's anything around identity and sense of being that's being damaged or shut down or not allowed, it increases anxiety, depression, self-harming, suicidality, general sense of unhappiness, and it can lead to drug and alcohol addiction, destructive relationships. It's just ongoing, massive impact.
So prior to this policy that the New Zealand Association of Counsellors has just put out, was there any kind of framework for dealing with conversion therapy?
Not specifically. So in our code of ethics, we have really clear ethical boundaries. It doesn't specifically talk about conversion therapy, but it does talk about supporting the person in what they need in counselling. So not, like I spoke about before, not imposing the counsellor's point of view or belief system upon the client. And that can be interpreted differently. So like what you asked before, if somebody came in saying, I want to change, I don't want to be like this, and so therefore if we'd stuck with our code of ethics as it was, it would be, oh, well, I'll support you in your choice to change. Whereas with the conversion therapy policy, that's clearly saying that is not acceptable for a counsellor.
Why did the association feel it needed a specific policy, and why now?
It came about a couple of years ago when there was a news story on conversion therapy in New Zealand. And so it became more in the news. It was something that had been talked about within the association. And we have an ethics committee, so we put it back to the ethics committee to look at what we as an association would be best to do, and our ethics secretaries worked on the conversion policy, and it went back and forward to make sure that we had everything that was appropriate in there to support the association and the clients that come to see counsellors going forward. And all our policies get reviewed every 2 years, so this will be continuously reviewed, and to look at what else do we need to do. And one of those things in my mind would be more education.
In the development of the policy, did you seek feedback from different communities? Because I imagine, like rainbow communities would have one view, well, probably many views, but families, I imagine, would have quite different views in terms of saying this isn't conversion therapy at all.
Yes. I can't answer specifically who the feedback was sought from when the Ethics Committee and Ethics Secretaries developed the policy. They did do a lot of research and included some of the research that they did as references to the policy. They did not specifically seek feedback from families.
Have you had any instances where, you're working with an individual, but the family is really, I guess, opposed to labelling it conversion therapy or just not wanting to anything to do with this?
Yes, yeah. And that happens a lot around the country. So in particular with young people, so the counsellors who are working with the really vulnerable age of early teens through to mid-20s are often encountering difficulties where the young person is coming, the family may not know or support it, and that the fear from the young person around coming out as who they are to their family, their immediate family or their wider family, is incredibly painful and difficult and shut down. There's not that opportunity. And the family choose not to be part of the counselling process, or it would be too damaging for them to come into that process.
Is conversion therapy primarily kind of relating to younger people, or is it a kind of a mixture of ages?
I think it would be a mixture of ages. I think we see more young people nowadays because counselling has become more okay, so it's more mainstream, whereas it used to be hidden in the past. So a lot of young people are coming, and our society has changed over time, whereas older people are still a little bit wary, or it feels like I'm being too vulnerable, or for older people, they've got a life that they don't want to disrupt, and what does that look like? So we're definitely seeing more younger people.
Are you aware of any laws in New Zealand that actually prevent conversion therapy?
No. I haven't seen any, have you?
No, I haven't. I think they were looking at that, but I don't think
it has happened. No.
Or something around
it. I think we should have laws. It's about protecting people's rights to be who they are and not allowing others to damage and hurt them. That to me is a basic human right.
So can you just walk me through what the policy actually does?
So the policy has a definition at the beginning and an opening statement saying NZAC, the New Zealand Counsellors Association, recognise all humans are free and equal in dignity, and that sexual diversity, including sexual orientation, gender identity and gender expression, is part of that human right, and that the definition of conversion therapy, which is also known as reparative therapy, is a pseudo-scientific practice or treatment that seeks to change, suppress, and or eliminate an individual's sexual orientation, gender identity, and or gender expression using psychological and or spiritual interventions. And then it goes into talking about what we take into consideration as an association, that around social prejudice and bias based on gender expression, identity, and sexual orientation, and some statistics looking at young people and what that's like, young people in terms of statistics who are not rejected and who are supported through their gender expression, sexual orientation expression, and ones who weren't. So looking at statistics around the impact of not having that support or being shut down or not allowed to be who they are. And some more around research around conversion therapy and the negative outcomes that come from that, like we talked about, negative self-image, difficulty in terms of living life in a healthy, functioning, flourishing way. And then what our position is the last part of the policy, and that it says we do not condone or support any therapeutic interventions such as conversion therapy that proactively wish to change a person's sexual orientation, gender identity, or gender expression. So that we don't support that, we do not condone it at all. And that we consider this therapy, this conversion therapy, to perpetuate societal injustice and discrimination, and that it's incredibly harmful and not grounded in any legitimate therapeutic practice at all, and that anyone in our association who was doing some kind of practice like that would be in breach of our code of ethics. And if that was the case, there is a process around making a complaint through our ethics office if there was any counsellor in New Zealand who was seen to be or heard to be practising a conversion therapy. So we would see that as a really serious misconduct or offence against a client. And the other part that has been added, put into the policy, is that if any other member of the Counsellors Association is aware of another counsellor in the association who is practising in this way, that we are obligated to do something about that. So if we are aware of anyone else who would be practicing conversion therapy who is a member of NZAC, then we are need to take action in relation to that behaviour. And I think that's really important. So we're looking out for people who are vulnerable in our in this situation.
And just to clarify, when we're talking about identity, is it the person and how they self-identify, or is it through things like, you know, identity documents like birth certificates?
Self-identity. Okay. Yeah, so it's about their own sense of identity.
Okay. Has there been any pushback from any of the counsellors? Because I'm assuming there are also older counsellors still practicing that had gone through the 70s where things were still mental illnesses. Mm. Has there been any pushback from?
No, and we have published our policy, the conversion therapy policy, on the website and also to members, and through our newsletter the ethics secretaries wrote an article to introduce the policy to the members, and we haven't had any pushback at all, and nobody within the association has said, you know, why are we doing this or what's at all. So that's, to me, that's positive.
And what about the wider community in terms of, say, like religious groups? Has there been any kind of...
No. Although we haven't publicised it widely in the public arena, and that is something that I would like to see the association do. Like before, when I was talking about we need to educate, not only our members but also the public. So this will be part of that.
So how many queries do you get coming into your office regarding, like, conversion therapy?
We've had a few queries. I was just talking to Ethics Secretary Abby before, and she said we have had a few queries. We can't talk about specifics in terms of complaints, but definitely some general inquiries.
Do you think there's been an increase in terms of inquiries since this policy's been out?
I think there's probably been an increase since there's been more wider media and societal attention. We are also getting general inquiries, just a lot more general inquiries anyway. So I think people are questioning and looking for, is this okay or not, so, which is a positive thing. So people are talking about sexual orientation, talking about gender identity, talking about what does that mean. So that kind of, to me, that's a positive that people are ringing in and asking. The general inquiries aren't necessarily from counsellors, they can be from public.
Does the association itself offer any kind of training or education programs for counsellors around rainbow-related issues?
No, we are going to be employing a professional development manager who will be organising ongoing professional development for qualified counsellors. So that will be one of the things that is high on our list to be providing, is professional development for working with rainbow community.
Because I imagine it must be quite tricky if you are not aware of the subtlety of conversion therapy, to maybe identify it as a counsellor.
Yes, I think so too. Yeah, as we were talking and thinking about it more in the last few days, that's what I was came up with. It's something, if we're not aware of, we can be, like you're saying, subtly imposing a view that is not acceptable.
Just finally, we are, and this is a wee bit off topic, but we are in the middle of a global pandemic with COVID-19, and we've gone through level 1, 2, 3 and 4, and we're back down to level 1 here in New Zealand at the moment. And I just wonder, how has COVID-19 impacted your membership?
Initially, when we went into lockdown, there was a huge disparity, I guess, between with our members. So some were really overworked and had lots of referrals and continued working, but using remote, online or telephone counselling options and platforms. And others, their work completely dried up. So that was because of privacy or not able to provide online, or their workplace wasn't able to, or discontinued their practicing. So in terms of the lockdown, it was quite different all over the country. And we did a survey during that time in level 3, just to kind of get a bit of a picture of what was coming to the counsellors, what the public were bringing. And so that was really interesting. And a lot in terms of anxiety, high anxiety, depression, relationship difficulties, some concerns in financial stress, and for some there was a high difficulties in looking after children and homeschooling. So those are all kind of things that we had expected. And we also expected, coming out of lockdown, that there would be an increase in need. And certainly that is what's happening. In schools there, after they came back to school, the school counsellors, while in lockdown, the school counsellors were not accessed as much, so young people didn't want to do online counselling. They weren't interested in video calling, FaceTime or anything like that. They used messaging the most, and that could have, again, been to do with privacy, not being able to be private at home, and disliking that platform, actually. So that was quite interesting to know, that young people prefer face-to-face with their counsellor rather than online relationship. And really important going forward when we think about interventions for young people, that we need to think about face-to-face. And when they got back to school, the school guidance counsellors were slammed. So there's been a huge increase in more referrals than normal. In mental health, as we've seen, there's been a lot in terms of funding going into mental health. For counselling, less so. So we would like to see more funding coming to public to be able to access counsellors as opposed to go to a mental health service. We don't anticipate this is going to go down for a period of, for a period of time when we look at the global situation. The impact's going to be ongoing, particularly with the stress financially and families and job losses.
And even just personally, when I talk to friends, you know, the real just COVID fatigue.
And the constant reading about when we are exposed constantly to distressing news, it traumatises us. And so we get desensitised in some ways. But also we forget that our stress, we get used to the stress levels. Not we forget it, but we get used to it. So we're used to being a little bit more on edge and tense. And so that over time is going to impact on our physiological body system. And that's not going to be helpful for our ongoing health as a population. And the other part that I think has had a huge impact is when we were in the level lock, the 3 and 4, where we couldn't hug or touch or be with people, I think that's had an impact that we don't really know yet. And still, you know, that's that part of, oh, do I shake hands? Do I hug someone? And that not having that physical touch. And for a lot of people who were living very isolated, where they were on their own, that's had a huge impact. For, you know, 6 to 8 to 10 weeks, they didn't have anyone that they could be physically close to. I have heard of a lot of elderly people who were living isolated. Their health has deteriorated to the state that they've need to go into a rest home way earlier than what they would have if that hadn't have happened.
So are you giving any specific advice to your membership around COVID and how to kind of help some of those issues?
Through each level, we put out our guidelines and recommendations. So the guidelines were about how to work under the different restrictions. So that was under 3, 4, 2, 1. And part of that was also about self-care for the counsellors. So where counsellors are working with people with high distress and need, and there's a lot of referrals coming in, there's often counsellors will just go yes and continue to work, even though really they need to be taking some time to look after themselves in order to be the best counsellor they can. So we're really recommending a lot of self-care, a lot of supervisions. We've an expectation that our counsellors have supervision at least monthly and more regularly if they've got a high workload. And ongoing support in terms of information and I think probably education, ongoing professional development education will be something that we would be looking at doing as well.